Michael.
Jacob.
An H-bomb made landfall while you were recording a podcast in an underground bank vault. Who are you recording with, and what do you do next?
Oh, God, I thought you were just telling me the news. I just, like, I thought you were being like, oh, my God, Mike, an H-bomb. While you were logging onto this computer, an H-bomb just dropped.
Here I am, sitting on Skype, just waiting for you to come and receive the good word.
I know. My heart is just racing right now. You can't start me off like that. Keanu Reeves last week was fine, but this is just inappropriate.
I didn't mean to escalate. But.
Okay. All right. So the question is, an H-bomb hits. H-bomb? What's the scenario?
It lands while you are recording a podcast in an underground bank vault. So okay. Who are you recording with, and what do you do next?
Who am I recording with? Maybe like Bear Grylls. Is this like who I want to be recording with, or who I'm likely to be? Because like it's probably going to be you, if it's likely. But like, yeah, I would like a survival person, or like a super mutant, maybe. Yeah, I would, okay, like a super mutant. You didn't speculate dead or alive, real or dead. So a Fallout 3 super mutant that's friendly, like Fox in Fallout 3. So I would definitely have him with me, and I would send him out for supply runs.
Okay. You'd stay in the bank vault?
I mean, should I leave when the bomb hits?
Well, no, it's already hit.
How far away is it hit from me?
Oh, you know, close enough that everything above you is basically destroyed.
What's that website where it's like map my nuke or whatever?
Yeah, that's a scary website.
Yeah, where you just like be like, hey, what bomb would you like to see explode over your city? You're like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's a real, real scary website. I don't like looking at that one.
It's terrible.
Too many scenarios that are there are no good scenarios.
They are bad. Okay, so who would yours be?
Well, I wasn't expecting to get it flipped on me.
What? It's only courteous of me to do that.
I know, and you know I should expect that. I do that all the time. I'll ask somebody a question and they won't have an answer, and then they'll ask me, and I don't have anything. They're like, well, why'd you ask? I'm like, well, because I was interested in what you had to say.
Yeah, I know. It's like, normally the expectation is that you only ask something when you want somebody to ask you in return. Like, that's just like the social construct we've made.
Right.
Where it's like, yeah, that's it. But in this case, it's not. You're just generally curious to know who I would be recording with. Like, that's a weird question. It's like if you're on a desert island, what three items would you have with you?
Yeah.
Like they have to be real items. Like, so is that what this kind of question is? Like, who would you want to be stuck in a vault with for however 40 years until the fallout dissipates?
Well, I wasn't like thinking that you'd have to stay in the vault. Are you familiar with the Twilight Zone episode Time Enough to Last?
No, I only know the one with the books and the guy with the glasses.
Yes, that's the same episode.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the best episode of the Twilight Zone.
It's the one everybody, you know, puts on, like they gift that, or they when he drops the glasses, it's just not fair, you know, like
it's so good. Yeah, but that's basically the story of that particular episode. He's like, he sneaks away to read books during his lunch break, and the only place he can do it quietly and not get bothered by his boss is apparently the bank vault in the basement. And so he like shuts the door, and then there's a explosion, and he comes out and everything's gone.
so the question that you're asking is really just, who do you want to be stuck on Earth with for the rest of your life if it's just you and them?
Sure. Well, I guess I'd be interested in like what you would do. Like, theoretically, you have all this time, and theoretically you'd be able to find like canned food that would keep you sustained. Like, theoretically,
okay, so
I don't have to worry about
fallout and radiation. This is not a question about like who do you want to spend your life in a vault with, like Cloverfield Lane style or whatever.
Oh no.
Okay, this is just a question about what would you do if you were the last person on Earth, and who would you be the last person on Earth with, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would be Aaron. Duh.
Good job, Mike.
God, Jesus. Like, what kind of question is this? The framing of this question is all wrong. It should be framed in the frame of the Twilight Zone period. Like, the podcast thing, you're just like, you're recording a podcast in a vault.
Well, I figure you're not just going to be hiding in a random bank vault reading books because you're not a bank teller. You're a podcaster, so you'd be podcasting in the bank vault, right?
I mean, if I if I have a Wi-Fi connection down there, I guess that would make sense. Otherwise, it's just the loneliest podcast ever.
It's probably very quiet.
I thought of two things today. I thought of, I forget what triggered this one, but I was thinking of like a, kind of like, what was that fictional podcast that was on, where the guy has the AI that's talking to him, like
Life
made
After?
From his, Life After, yeah, it's like that. But imagine like you just queue up your podcast one day and like, or you're doing like a listen back or something, or like suddenly episodes from our future, like future podcasm episodes start showing up on your feed one morning.
Oh man.
Wouldn't that be like a cool kind of like, it wouldn't have to be your own podcast, but like, it'd be kind of cool if it was your own. It would be like more compelling. Like a WTF with Marc Maron from like next week is really not that interesting to me. Unless he's like, ah, the world's ending. You know, you could still do the same. You could deliver the same information, but it'd be cooler if it was like information from your own life.
Yeah. Well, next week's episode of Marc Maron was recorded 3 months ago.
That's true. On a lot of occasions. But it's more, but yeah, I mean, I think that would be a really cool concept. And there's some, obviously if I've thought of it, somebody else has. So it's just how it works.
I mean, there is technology now that can basically make like a, you know, a complete imprint of your voice using a very, very little amount of audio.
Project
Voco. So theoretically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like with as many podcasts as you and I have recorded.
Yeah.
There's plenty to work on. So.
Oh God, there is.
I mean, in the future, like if people were really into the show and we both died, theoretically they could just generate new episodes and probably wouldn't be that far off.
Yeah. The deep faking too is going to be ridiculous.
It's already ridiculous.
It is really bad. The Putin one with Melania's body with Putin's face. That was weird.
That's weird. Did you see the one with Steven Seagal kicking those dudes' asses with like a completely straight face?
Was that deep fake?
It was. The video is real. Like that's actually him fighting, but they put a very bored looking Steven Seagal face on Steven Seagal's.
That was
body.
Deep faked.
I know. It's really good, right?
I took it totally at face value.
He looks so bored.
But I thought that was the point. I thought the point was that he just didn't want to be there. Oh my God. I failed the Turing test the media passed the Turing test, although it's not artificial intelligence, but it's like, what's the test, the Turing test for a deep fake? Like, is there an equivalent? Like if it fools me, is there a test that it exists?
I think that falls under the same category. I mean, you could probably coin something right now and just write a very long dissertation on.
Like I said, if somebody's thought of this phenomenon, then it definitely exists. Let's find out.
Well, it's okay. I got fooled by that Love and Radio episode, so we can't win them
all. That was good. I guess they don't say... Man, so that Seagal thing was fucking fake. God damn.
Yeah, it's scary. Like, I saw it at first on Instagram. I'm like, oh, that's funny. Like, he looks really bored. I know he's a good fighter, but he looks really, really bummed out here. And then I saw on Twitter later that it was... is deep faked.
What if that's just his publicity company that said that? They're just like,
I don't know. He could use a publicity company though.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's scary. Cause the fun ones are like the Jennifer Lawrence, Steve Buscemi one. Like that's a fun
that
one.
That was very funny.
And like the Melania and Putin thing, like that's what deep fake should be for. They should have no practical use.
No,
they do have a very practical function, but those should not be allowed.
No, because I mean, there's no practical function unless the function is to deceive, and that's never a good thing. So, I mean, when it's funny, it's funny, and that's that. But it's starting to get to the point where it's being used for political means, and it's only going to get worse from here. So that's something we have to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah, I'll take that nuclear holocaust right now and the bunker, please.
Yeah, I'd say that we're dropping the tone of the show down, but I think we actually started at a low note and we're working our way up.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you were at the lowest note because you actually made me think that it's something had just happened in the news that I was really worried about. I appreciate it. I was trying to figure out how we were going to start the show, you know, today. So that was, your opening is much appreciated. It's probably better than me saying hi.
Well, you know, a lot of people ask what they had for breakfast this morning. And that gets kind of boring when you have the same kind of cereal every morning, like I believe you do. So,
is that, well, you know what? I switched to Cheerios lately. Did I say that last week?
Working on your cholesterol?
No, I was just noticing how much cereal I was consuming in the morning. Like I would have like a bowl of any cereal with sugar in it, like Frosted Flakes, Honey Nut Cheerios, and I'd have like three bowls of cereal. And like, I was not putting on weight because of it, but I was like, there's other things that I'd rather spend calories on in my day. And so I switched to Cheerios, and now I have just one bowl of cereal in the morning, and that's it. And I have no desire to have another.
Have you considered just having one bigger bowl of cereal?
Like a mixing bowl, like in I Love You, Man? Or was, no, that's Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yes.
I know, this movie's confused. And Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he has the mixing bowl of Fruit Loops.
Well, yeah, and he has that. I remember him having like the... Doesn't he have like one of those like plastic containers for cereal on top of the fridge?
I've had that before too. I definitely used to use one of those in my old apartment before I left.
But yeah, now like a bigger bowl is a nice thing, because it, when I finish a bowl of cereal, I always want another bowl of cereal, and I'm always going to have a second bowl of cereal at least. But then I have to re-pour the cereal. I usually have to get the milk back out because I didn't think that far ahead and I just put it away. It's just a pain. So just get a bigger bowl. And that's what I started doing when I had cereal.
Then I just have three bigger bowls. That's my issue.
Well, I don't know.
I would have like, three mixing bowls. I would be down. I was going through two boxes of cereal a week, I think. And these are like New York size like cereal bowls. These are not like cereal boxes, what I'm saying.
What's the difference in size in New York City?
I don't, maybe I just got, maybe it's just, I think of like a small box of cereal is what, like the cereal is so expensive here for some reason. I don't know why.
And shelf, I would go space, for the, like it just takes up more shelf space.
I don't know. It's like $5.50 for like a regular, like a small size box of Cheerios. Yeah. $7.49 for a bit, like the family size boxes.
That's, can you imagine insane. Paying?
Right. So, but I mean, I live across the street from a CVS. So I just go in there and they have these ridiculous deals. It's like $2 for a small box. And like, maybe it's just cause that's what the price it's supposed to be at. And they're trying to move certain cereals. Fine. But I usually buy the one that's on sale. But like, you know, they'll have like Lucky Charms on sale for like $2 a box or whatever. And I'll just go for like, I'll grab two of those. So I spend $4 on cereal, and I was going through two boxes of cereal a week, essentially, just because every day I was having three small bowls of cereal, you know, like not like probably the serving size, I would guess.
I think, but a serving size is like a cup.
Yeah. And that's what I was having, like three cups of cereal a day.
Oh
yeah.
Well, that's
in the morning.
Not that bad.
It's not that bad, but it's like a lot of cereal. It's a lot of extra serving sizes, you know, like if it's serving size, it's just one, then maybe just one is fine, not three. I don't know. Anyway, moral of the story is I switched to a boring cereal. There's like this, I even compared it. Like they had regular Cheerios on sale next to this one I'd never tried before. It was like, it might have been, oh, it was a cinnamon. It was like a cinnamon Cinnabon version of Cheerios. Like it was a cinnamon roll flavored Cheerios.
Oh.
Different from apple cinnamon Cheerios.
Right. Those are good.
Yeah. Those are my
favorite. They cut your mouth up real bad though.
They do. They do. They definitely do that. Honeycomb does that too for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's like it's the porous kind of cereals. It's the one, it's, I avoid any cereal that has the same appearance on the box as flavored pumice.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, yeah, it does look like a naturally abrasive, because you cut it, you break it up with your teeth, and then there's just still pieces of just large,
it just eviscerates the roof of your mouth. It's bad news.
It's violent cereal. So anyway, yeah, I was comparing the nutrition facts in the middle of CVS with my dog at my side, just being like, okay, so is this Cheerios? The regular Cheerios is I think it was like something like 7 grams of sugar per serving, and it was like 17 grams of sugar for the cinnamon one. And I was like, okay, well, this is like a no-brainer. Like,
right, you gotta get the cinnamon.
If sugar is the villain now in society, which I feel like it is, like fat was vilified for a while, and then we're like, oh wait, no, fat is good. Fat is good, guys. And I feel like now I'm on the vilify sugar train. Huh. So that's, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're telling me these things, because I'm behind on the trades, and I don't really know what's in vogue.
The sugar trades?
Right. Just the health journals.
Dude, I'm watching this deepfake again, and I
Steven Seagal?
Yeah, there's no indication that it's a deep fake.
Well, to be fair, there are only very few shots where it actually shows his face.
Yeah.
And it's edited pretty tightly, so the deep fake, like, it probably wasn't even that hard. It was probably a pretty simple one, but if you just put a straight face on, you don't even have to do the whole face, probably. Like, you probably just have to do, like, the mouth, and that's probably it. He's not a very expressive guy in general, I don't think.
But every comment is, nobody's getting it.
Yeah, nobody gets it.
The top like on the top comment on this one with 63 replies and 1,400 upvotes and no downvotes is, it's amazing what you can do when you have two willing actors, which is
they're faked out.
Yeah, time. Well, I was too. I think I sent it to my group chat. And now I feel bad. I'm like,
oh, it's okay. I mean, you didn't willfully disseminate.
But that's
fake.
I did willfully do it. Well, I didn't. Well, I mean, that's the point of fake news. The point of fake news is to get everybody. Man.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna let go of this. Now I'm scared. Cause I'm usually the one to spot, like, be like, okay, that's fake. You know, like, oh, that's CG.
Right.
Or, like,
but it's getting,
like,
really hard now.
The Captain Disillusion train. Like, you know, you watch Captain Disillusion on YouTube at all?
No.
Oh, dude, you would love Captain Disillusion.
What is this?
It's a YouTube channel of this guy. He's a special effects master, but he's all one guy. He's not a studio. He's like a self-taught special effects, computer animation guy, film buff, you know, all these things, editor. And he's completely self-produced, and he has a YouTube and a Patreon, and he just basically... It started off as just like a debunking thing where he debunked in character, and he's still in character, but now he's more like he's drifting towards critiquing the culture of critiquing and being like, he's not shitting on his fans, but like making fun of his fans who are just like really, you gotta, this has to be fake. You know, this one has to be fake. This one has to be fake. Oh, review this one to show us why this is fake. And it's always, and sometimes now he's just being like, no, this is actually real. You guys are just like too skeptical, and here's how you can tell it's real. And that's been like sort of the message he's going with some of the most recent ones. It's like, he's very good. And he's like, it's obviously a little like, it's very campy because he's like in makeup and a weird suit.
Yeah, does he do this every time? Like half of his face is painted.
Yes, and he does live speaking events too, and he has a couple on his channel that are just live speaking events, and they are, it's just him playing a character that's like his assistant to Captain Disillusion. They're really good videos too, because they're like very in-depth. He actually, if he finds a spoof video, he will actually remake, I'm sorry, if he finds a fake, you know, animation that's being passed off as something real, he will remake it himself.
See, that's clever, because it shows, see, this is fake and I can show you because I can also do it. Like, I am just a guy on YouTube and I can make this also.
He's like the Amazing Randy. Do you know that whole thing?
I don't think that you're talking about what I'm thinking of.
James Randy.
No, not James Randy. See, I was thinking of Griffin McElroy's beloved World of Warcraft character, but
no, I'm definitely not talking. What's his character's name?
Randy.
Is it like Randy, like James Randy? It's not named after James Randy.
No, it's R-A-A-N-D-Y-Y, Randy.
Okay. Yeah, so James Randy, do you know who he is?
No.
Okay, so he's essentially like a magician who doesn't believe in magic. He believes in illusion, but he doesn't believe... trying to pull one over on the audience, making them think that it's anything mystical. Essentially, he's a skeptic. Okay. He's the co-founder of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, originally known as Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal. He's the guy that would they have a convention every year, and I believe it's Vegas or somewhere, and they have a convention every year, and they offer like a $50,000 reward to any psychic who can come in and actually be a psychic on stage in front of an audience of skeptics. And like, a lot of them will be like card trick magicians. They're like, okay, here's a deck that I brought myself, and you can do your card trick with my deck and see if it works, or like something like that. Like, what card am I thinking of? And nobody's ever been able to do it. There was a documentary on Netflix on him, and I really recommend it if we're going down the whole Captain Disillusion James Randy train, because they've been featured on each other's things. it just like it, it's just if you're I think you're a skeptic and I'm a skeptic of a lot of things, and I think you'd be really into it, and anybody else who's listening that is into skepticism in general. Like,
beyond this guy's makeup, he also has like an outfit.
Yes, it's insane. I can't believe he's adhered to it for this long.
I know. Well, like, logistically, I wonder, does he own multiples of this jacket, or is this jacket really stinky?
I'm sure he washes it, but like from reading like AMAs with him, he just says that it was the first thing. Like, he had it lying around his house and he just wanted to do it. Like, the clothes were just something he had lying around that fit with the character that he wanted to make. And I think the premise behind his face makeup is that he's actually like a metal being with a mask of skin around his eyes. Anybody who hasn't seen him is going to think that's really weird for me saying that. If you look at it, it makes a little more sense. Like, he's not wearing like a mask of skin. He just has his face not painted around his eyes.
Well, yeah. When I saw it the first couple times, I'm like, why is the lower half of his face painted? But then I saw a couple more pictures where the paint was done a little better, and it does look like he's peeled away part of his human face mask.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Android body.
I think that, yeah, he's an android. I think you'll lose a lot of time on his channel if you get into it. So like,
that is,
it's a great,
true.
It's a great rabbit hole to fall down though, because it's a scientific hole. It's a skeptical hole. It's a great hole. Captain Disillusion's got a great hole. You heard it here on podcast. Yeah.
Moving right here. Moving right along.
Oh, okay. Sure. What's up?
Okay, so let's see what's up next. What else is new with you this week? Anything good to share?
No,
nothing.
I don't have nothing good to share. I'm not using my monitor right now because he made me paranoid
about the drugs.
Well, yes.
Hidden cameras, hidden microphones.
Hidden microphones more. But yeah. Here I am recording a podcast next to it. So who knows?
It doesn't have a card reader on it, does it? You haven't been swiping.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Swiping my credit card. Yeah, every once in a while, like 3 a.m., it just pops on and just asks me to verify my Apple Pay credentials. And I give it my Apple ID, my password, and I swipe my credit card in this weird slot that's on the side. And I don't know. It just gives me an error afterwards. So.
Well, you're probably not swiping in the right direction.
I should probably keep swiping it. I think so.
I finished that scary video game.
Alien Isolation?
Yeah, man. I did two very, very long binges, I guess over the weekend and the early part of the week. I thought there were only 15 chapters to the game, and I was on chapter 13. So I sat down one night thinking, all right, I'm just going to finish this thing. And so I play, and I die a lot of times. It's very frustrating. There are certain parts where it's like, it's tense, but you know where the next save point is, so you're able to get to it and save real quick, and you know that like lowers the tension for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
There are other sections that are very hard, and the save point is very, very far away. And then you realize, oh, it's only really hard because I'm trying to collect every single thing in this area and then kill all these bad guys and then get to the save. When what you should be doing is killing all the bad guys if you can, get to the save, then go back and get all the stuff. Because if you collect all the stuff and then you use all the stuff to build, you know, your Molotov cocktails and your stem packs and all these things that you need, and then you die, you have to recollect and build all of that stuff again. So it wastes a bunch of time. And I figured that out on like the fifth go through.
But you're at the end of the game and it took you that. So not only did it take you the last time, it took you till the end of the game to figure that out.
Well, you know, it gets harder at the end of the game for like a lot of reasons. So I'm dying a lot more as I get into it. Because I have this mentality throughout the whole thing to try to collect and find every item, every log that I possibly can, so I can, you know, get those achievements. And at the end, what I find is, one, I wasn't searching as good as I thought I did, or I was, because I didn't get the achievements that I thought I was for sure going to get. And then, my mentality of collecting all of this stuff doesn't really translate to the increasing difficulty. So basically, I started at chapter 13. I thought I only had two chapters left. I was wrong. There's like 18 chapters in this game.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I read 18 when I was looking at it years ago.
Yeah, and so I got through pretty far, and I looked at the clock, and it was like It's like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. How is that even possible? Because I sat down at, I don't know, probably like 9:30. I was only going to play a couple hours.
Did May even come home? Was she in your life?
She's in bed.
Okay. She was in bed at 9:30. Okay. I thought she like said goodnight. Well, she did. 11.
She went to bed and like watched Frasier or something. And then I stayed up and played the video game. And then it's like 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm like, what the hell? And I go to bed. I'm so tired. And I didn't have to, you know, luckily I didn't have to like wake up earlier or anything the next morning. So, I sleep in and she actually wakes me up when she comes home for a break around noon. And then she tells me that last night was, the time change. So I didn't play nearly as long as I thought I did,
but the time moved
ahead of me and got me all screwed up. But I did finish the game the other night, and wow, man, it's a great game.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I wish I could play it. Erin got me, well, she didn't get me, but she offered to get me a pass to go see the new Jordan Peele movie.
Mm-hmm. Us?
Us, yeah. There's a special premiere for her job, and I was like, and she's like, come see this with me. I'm like, I can't.
Oh, dude, you should go, though.
I'm too scared. I told her I will 100% watch it on VOD or like whatever streaming service we use. Like I will use that to watch it at home with her.
Yeah.
But I can't be in public seeing a scary movie. I will lose my shit. And like, I know the whole point of seeing a scary movie in theaters is like to be scared with the audience and it's like a group event. But like, I need to be able to yell at the screen. I need to be able to just like diffuse my internal fear at being startled.
You need to be able to shout no. No.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Like I just don't know that at a screening with her coworkers if she wants me to be that person. Mm. She was really trying. She's like, "Oh, I'll be there with you." And like, I don't like scary movies either, but like we'll be there together. And I'm like, "You don't understand the physical reaction I'm going to have if I see a scary movie in theaters." Like it's like we watched Get Out at home mm-hmm. and like I think it's definitely meant to be like a horror thriller, you know, but I think the social commentary definitely, like, I feel like Peele said that like it kind of overshadowed the horror element of it, although both were very strong, you know.
Yeah,
like, they're both like
sure.
10 out of 10s, but they both, like, you know, one overtook the other for good reason. And I think that Us is going to be very similar, but he really went all out on the horror aspect, he was saying, for this one.
Yeah, it looks, I mean, even from the previews, it looks pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the trailer on Christmas, I think, when it came out, mm-hmm. and I was terrified. I was just, like, sitting in my parents' house, just watching this trailer on my phone, and being like, this is not something I will see. it's spooky.
Yeah.
So I don't, it's just bad.
I get it. I've listened to I've Got Five on it probably 4 times this week.
That's, somebody said that today too. They're like, "Oh, but don't you like that song?" And I was like, "Yeah, I like that song.
It is a good song." And the remix for the movie is so good. It's shorter because it's basically just the music for the trailer, but uh-huh. it makes it so spooky.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to see it. Like, I know it's going to be a great movie, and I want to see it, but I need to be able to see it on my own terms, where I can like lower the volume at scary parts and like yell at the screen. And shout out theories, you know, trying to ruin the movie for myself as I'm watching it. These are all defense mechanisms that I have when watching a horror film. And I can't inflict that. I'm going to not inflict that on any other audience.
Well, it's admirable of you. It's
and that's why I can't play scary video games either. Like, we've talked about Dead Space, how I gave up after the first one.
Yeah.
And Alien Isolation is no exception.
It's the scariest video game I've ever played, for sure. It's so well done.
Oh, did you play Dead Space, though?
I've like watched some people play parts of it. It looks fun.
The beginning of Dead Space was thrilling, to say the least. You know, like, like my friend made me play it with all the lights off.
Oh yeah, that's probably the way to go about it, though.
He wouldn't let me change the volume. He turned off all the lights in the apartment we were at. We're playing on a pretty large size screen, and I just had to play it straight through. And he's like, "Okay, you have to play just the first level, okay? Just play the first level." Any of my friends who's listening to this right now know exactly who I'm imitating. But yeah, it was that. And oh God. And I played through the first level, and I was like, because it ends on a very specific, you know, note. And you're just like, "Huh, well, that was something." Like,
did you ever play the PT demo?
That's the
it's like the Silent Hills teaser.
Yeah,
game.
With was it Guillermo del Toro?
Yeah,
and was and, Kojima? No, yeah. it wasn't.
Yep,
it was Kojima.
Yeah, because I mean it was like literally it was a teaser. It was like a I don't know. It stood for like something teaser, like you know preview teaser or something, and it was just a teaser for the game that eventually got axed. But that was spooky as hell.
That's so weird that they axed it, though.
Yeah, and even weirder that they removed it. And not only that they removed it from the store, but they removed it from, like, your download library. So if you had got it from the store, but then removed it from your system at any point, you couldn't even re-download it. So the only people who still have that game still have it installed on their system. And I don't know for sure. I think I might have one.
Well, you couldn't spread it around either, right? Because you probably need like some kind of key.
Yeah, I mean, they're just it's tied to your system, so
yeah.
People were actually like, I guess after it was initially pulled, systems with the game installed were selling for like $600 to $700 on eBay.
Was it that good?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I think mostly people just want to like have that piece of video game history. I guess it is a strange thing, but.
What a crime to like take that away from people.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I was watching some video games about how all that went down with Konami, and it was just it's a bad scene.
So what's next for you in terms of gaming?
Oh, dude, I don't know. Like, part of me, this is a common thread, but part of me really wants to replay the game. Now that I know like how the game works, I can go at it with, you know, like, at a more expert level, and I don't mean increasing the difficulty because that game is fucking hard enough. But there are a couple more achievements I want to finish. I was actually proud of the number of achievements that I did finish, but you know, there's always more, and I want to find more logs. I was thinking about downloading the like the Nostromo levels. There's like a couple of additional Nostromo level stuff.
That's, like DLC?
Yeah, it takes place during the first Alien.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, I was thinking about getting that. But I don't know, like, I know how long it took me to finish the game this time, and I don't know if I want to dedicate that much time to something again.
Part of it was the puzzles, right? And figuring out, like, the way to do something. Like, if you knew the way to go, like, I want to play Last of Us again.
Yeah, me too. Like, when I finish Last of Us, I'm like, oh, I gotta play this again. But I figured I'm going to let some time pass, because it's going to be a while till the next game comes out, and I'm going to want to play it again anyway, so... I might play that next, actually.
Is there a new game plus in Alien Isolation? I know there's one in Last of Us.
What's that?
New game plus? It's when you get to start the game over again, but with all your upgrades and everything.
Oh, I don't know. It'd be something to look at. I don't think so. It would be nice.
Because the Last of Us new game plus is like you don't start the game with all your weapons. Mm. But you start it with all your like your power ups, and then you'll come across your weapons as you go. So you can't like start the game out with the most powerful weapon.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Actually, that'll be really good for that. But in Alien, you get these upgrades for the stuff that you can build, because you can build like smoke bombs, EMP mines, pipe bombs. Like, there's all these different things that you can craft, and I barely use them until probably about level 12. I started
using. Is that why you had such a hard time?
The noisemakers? Well, the thing is, most, like, they all make noise. And if anything makes noise, it draws the alien to where you are. So you can.
But don't you want to throw it somewhere else?
That's like, what I started using the noisemakers for, because the alien would be hanging around this one area and be like, okay, I just need to get through this hallway, but he's going to see me. So I'll just toss this down the other way and he'll go after it. And that works. That's great. But when you want to use them against different kinds of enemies, so like the working Joes, the android guys, you want to throw the EMPs their way if there's like a group of them, because it'll take them all out at once. That way you don't have to go at them with a stun baton and then bash them 7 times in the head with your wrench or whatever. But then the alien comes like the alien will kill you while you're beating in the head of this android. So it doesn't really work in all scenarios, which is why I use them very limitedly. But as you go, you upgrade those things as well. So you initially unlock them and you learn to build them, and then you build them, and then you get these upgrades as you go. And I'm not actually sure what the upgrades do. I think maybe it takes
health.
Less. Huh?
Health?
No, they're upgrades specifically for the things that you're building. So for example, like smoke in level maybe 16, you get the version 3 of the smoke grenade or the smoke bomb. And I think all it does is it might take less material to craft. I'm not positive on that.
Huh.
But by then it's like when am I going to use the smoke grenade? It's level 15. Everything on the ship is on fire at this point. Smoke's not going to do me a lot of good. but it would be cool to go like through from the very beginning of the game with all of the different weapons that you get over the course of the game and stuff. Cause you anticipate getting all these awesome weapons and you get them so late in the game. It's crazy. Cause the first part, they just want you to be scared shitless and sneak around.
Right.
And then you get the weapons, and the weapons that you get no longer work against the new enemies that they put in the game. It's like everything in that game is made to make you feel totally helpless, totally like shit out of luck. You're just stuck, and you're going to have to figure this out using your cunning and your quickness. But it's such a good game. The design is so good. The maps
are
huge.
Wow, that sounds so great to just not to feel. I love feeling helpless in video games. It's like my favorite thing.
I saw something on the creative designer's game, like the creative director, he posted something where I think somebody modded the game to create a passive mode, which I think you would love. It takes out the working Joes, it takes out the alien, and you can just like wander around this gigantic and beautiful ship.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah,
I would take that. Yeah, that sounds like a fan, like an alien fan's dream who just doesn't want
Yeah, it
deal
is.
With the alien.
And like everything is designed, it's so true to the original films that it feels more real than anything else. You know, like I feel like video games have a much better they have more room to make something more true to a movie than the opposite way around. And I'm thinking like Doom is a good example of that. They've made the one movie and they're coming out with another one pretty soon. And they both try to recreate the feeling. Yeah, yeah. It's like it's like a B movie. It looks like a B movie. There's no good names in the movie, but
like Jerry Seinfeld's B movie.
Nah, not quite. They make that a video game?
Maybe there's a spinoff.
I have to get that
for like PlayStation 1.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think I might go for Last of Us next, just to go through that story one more time, play that extra mission that you were telling me about.
Oh yeah, definitely hit that up.
Because that game will be coming out probably in the next year or so. And then I think Death Stranding is coming out 2020. And like I've said before, those are like the only two games that I'm really looking forward to. So.
Yeah. I started Breath of the Wild.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh man, goodbye life.
I know, I have no time to play it though. So like I have to have self-control.
You can take it to work though and play it on your breaks.
I don't have time on my breaks. On my breaks, I'm reading comics to keep up with that, and or doing work or applying for other jobs.
Well, that's
I don't have time, and I'm trying to read the book for Diana, for Welcome. No, for King Cast. What do we call it? Welcome to
Welcome to Kingdom.
Welcome to the Geekdom Kingdom. It's shoot. We need to get this right now.
Cemetery, Mike.
Chat Cemetery, thank you. Thank you so much. Sorry, Dan.
Yeah. Which book is this?
I'm doing Thinner.
Was that one of the short stories?
No, it's definitely not short. Oh, okay. I mean, it's not one of his long ones. It's not like Dreamcatcher or like, you know, the really thick ones. Mm-hmm. It's not an It, but it's definitely a longer one. And, you know, it's funny because Kindle gives you the estimate of how long it takes.
Yeah.
It's going to take you to finish the book. And it depends on how fast you're turning the pages. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll just be staring at a page for so long and not just in reading. And I'll see the timer just creeping up. It's being like, okay, you started this page and it was 4 hours and 45 minutes left in this book. And now you're back up to 5 hours again, buddy. Are you okay? It's like, do you need help? Do you want to like get this on tape? That'd be a great gimmick if they popped up with like a book on tape thing. It's like, can
they
you
do
read?
That. You can
in the Kindle app?
Yeah, you can sync Audible. I think it's do they have their own thing or is Audible part of their ecosystem?
I don't know.
Yes, it is. They bought Audible. So, I think the way it works, and maybe it's not available in all books, but you can if you have a membership to whatever their like premium thing is, you can sync your pages to your audiobook. So if you want to read it, you can read it or you can listen to it, and it syncs up the pages and like the spots in the audiobook. It's really nice.
Well, that's an idea.
Yeah.
Listening to it on double speed would be great too, but then I'd fall behind on my podcast.
No judgment on Stephen King audiobooks. I had to do the same thing for her podcast.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, yeah, you drive a lot too, so yeah, that's something too. Mm-hmm. But back to Zelda. This game is amazing.
It's incredible.
Erin's had it for a while, and Erin had to give it up because she was just spending too much time on it. Like, she mm-hmm. said she sunk 80 hours into it, and she didn't even beat it. Like, it's just so much to do, and she was just like, I don't like how I'm living my life right now, was essentially her thing. Like, we hadn't moved in together yet, and she was still playing it, and she said she like fell asleep. I think she says the final straw was like she just fell asleep one night while holding the Switch in bed, and just like the Switch hit her in the face probably, and she just like, I was climbing up a mountain, and I got so bored that I hit myself in the face with the Switch when I fell asleep.
Well, I picked up my Switch and it says 130 hours or more.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome. And I mean, I must be in like the 20-25 hour range, and I have done nothing in this
game.
Isn't
that great though? It's such a great feeling.
I do love the vastness of it. And like, that's what I liked about Fallout 4, was that like just how huge the map is. This feels even bigger though. Mm. Just because like, I feel like I'm moving so slowly. The fast traveling is really helpful, and I'm very grateful for it. But like, I'm sticking to like one area, and you know, you have like this completionist theory. I have it, and I think you do too. This completionist mode of playing video games when it's not terrifying and you're just trying to get through it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're trying to get every Korok seed you can. And
but then you find out, my friend, he clued me in. He was like, listen, you can only use 300 of those Korok seeds. That's so right. Don't bother finding the 600.
But it's worth getting 300 of them for sure.
Yeah, to have all those item slots, absolutely. I've been going down into the shrines and got to go to those shrines, man. And they having these doing these fights against the whatchamacallits, the what do you call them?
The guardians.
Yeah, the little mini guardians, though not a big one. Mm. And running out of weapons to fight them with, because then Erin had to tell me how to deflect their shot and mm-hmm. like timing it and everything. And like once she told me how to do that, it was great.
Oh yeah.
And I was terrified about running into a guardian by the castle.
Yeah. Have you gone in? Have you like tried to get it through the courtyard or anything yet?
No, I just got to the outside of it for that memory.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't know how much, I guess this, I don't even, I can't spoil it. I don't think, I don't think I can spoil that game at this point, but yeah, like, so for the memory, I went to there and just got that. I feel like I have no direction right now though. Like it's so broad.
It's so, it's up to you. It's like whichever way you want to go.
Well, but I need the video game to tell me what to do, Jacob. It's just like my life. I need to be told what to do at all times or else my life is meaningless.
There are quests and things. There are things you can do if you like direction, for sure.
But they're all like mini quests and things like that. And
yeah, but they eventually lead you to places that matter and like more memories and things.
Well, I'm being facetious. I love the way this game is so open-ended. Mm-hmm. It's just so disorienting to not know where I should be going, because like right now my three quest objectives, like main quest objectives, are like, you know, defeat Ganon, something about the divine beast. I know what that is at this point, and then the other, what's the third one, the get your memories back. But there's it's not being like go talk to this person. It just pointed to like four spots in the map for the beasts, and I'm like go get these beasts. I'm like, all right, I guess I'll just venture into this dark spot in the map that I have no idea what I'm coming up against and just go try and do this now. Sure. And the memory thing is like all these pictures of places that I have to go to, all these locations that I don't even know where they are. And I'm like, well, that's, I know two of these spots, so I can go look at these two things, and it doesn't buy me anything in the end. it's a cool cutscene and, you know, knowledge. I follow an old acquaintance on Facebook who said I saw this post before I even started the game. I think that's what kicked me into wanting to start it was she said that her boyfriend was playing, and I didn't know what it meant at the time, but she's like, oh, he just started playing, he got the paraglider, and he's just going straight to the castle to fight Ganon. And she said he did pretty well mm-hmm. for only for just getting, you know, the bare minimum you need to do to get off the plateau and then going up to the castle. I don't know what any of that
people
means.
People do that so they can go in there, they can get some really good weapons, and then go out and just like crush the easy stuff.
Oh yeah, I kind of like the slow build to this, like just to like I was getting one shotted by everybody, pretty much.
Oh yeah, well that's the fun of it. You got to complete some shrines and
yeah. Okay, stamina or hearts?
Oh, for sure stamina at first, because you're gonna need to run away. Like you're gonna need to run. You're gonna need to climb. I think I was doing like I did like 2 full circles of stamina before I started working on the hearts. Which
that's
is probably
move.
Like a little far. I think I probably could have like switched back and forth a little bit more, but it was good for me.
I wasn't really worried about spoiling this game for myself because it's a Zelda game, mm-hmm. really. And, you know, they're all more or less the same. I could be wrong. You know, you don't have to correct me, but I understand that there could be some twists and turns in this. But yeah, so I just Googled it. I was like, should I do stamina or hearts? And they're like, a specific item will require a certain amount of hearts, like very vaguely saying this. And then obviously some idiot further down the thread spoils it. So I'm like, okay, well, I know exactly what the item is and how many hearts I will need to get that item. So sure, why the hell not? Like,
yeah,
so,
but by that point in the game, there's a mechanism that allows you to...
Right, and I've already encountered that mechanism, and I was very frustrated when I saw it at first, and then I realized that it was actually why it existed that way.
Yeah, it probably is, yeah. I don't think I ever used it, because I was managing it pretty well. I always knew. I'm like, okay, I'm doing pretty well in stamina. I don't think I need any more at this point, and I would just go for hearts. Which was nice, because once you start getting more hearts, it's like, this is a completely different game now. I'm not dying every 4 seconds.
Yeah, I would guess that somebody like a simpleton like myself, like their approach to it would be like one heart upgrade, one one stamina bar. But then I was just getting frustrated playing it, you know, and not in a way that maybe want to like rage quit or anything, but just maybe want to get stronger. And I'm like, okay, what's the best strategy here? And I was like, let's just look for strategy. Let's not look for plot or anything like that. And I'm glad I know about the heart requirements thing for that specific item, but I don't know that... I think my plan is to just... Like, there was one, like, Verge article or somebody's, like, one of those video game blogs, maybe Gizmodo, and they're just like, Breath of the Wild with nothing but stamina is the way it's meant to be played.
Like, I mean, there's just so much more you can get to more quickly with the stamina. Yeah. It was a no-brainer for me.
I mean, in any
video game,
I'm
though,
happy.
Where you get to adjust your stats, I'm always, like, full speed.
Full speed, really. I usually go for full power because I've never regretted not being able to, like, destroy an enemy.
I'm not good at fighting. So if it's you know, like a Skyrim or something, I'm very rarely going to give my guy stats for, like, full power or anything like that. Because I'm going to, like, naturally avoid fighting anyway, so what's the use?
Well, I mean, I think we've discussed a few times in this show, I'm not an avid gamer. Like, when I get into a game, I go, it's for a specific title. So it's usually a Zelda game, a Metal Gear Solid game, a Kingdom Hearts game.
You didn't get it, did you?
No, I didn't. Okay. No, I didn't. No, I made my mind. I'll wait till it goes on sale or becomes like the PSN game of the month or whatever.
Yeah. I guess Modern Warfare Remaster is on there right now. People are telling me I should get it. I'm like, yeah, I haven't paid for PSN in a long time.
I mean, it's, I like it. Aaron accidentally renews it every year because they don't tell her.
Right.
They're just like,
it's always
by the way. Yeah, surprise. You now have
12 more free games.
And I'm like, well, it's more than 12. They put more than, it's like a couple games a month sometimes. Okay. Three, two or three games a month.
That's not bad. They're very rarely
good games. I got Metal Gear Solid 5 from that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, last year, and that was amazing. Oh. That was the best game ever. Well, so close. That was like 80% of the way to the best game that I ever played.
Well, they were making good progress, and then they went drastically over budget, and apparently, that was the whole reason that the Konami Kojima split even occurred. But
yeah, it was bad. I mean, it was a great game, and that's why I say it's close to the best game I ever played. That's how Ben put it when he was describing. He's like, man, that was almost the best game I ever played, except for the end, the almost end, the three quarters end. Mm. I've never experienced a game end that abruptly. It's crazy. So Breath of the Wild rules. I wish I had more time to play it. I tried to take the Switch on the bus when I went up to Boston last week, like I was telling you, but I couldn't play. I got sick on the bus.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
I know. So I had like a 4.5 hour bus ride where I had to just listen to stuff, you know?
Mm.
What a drag.
At least you got to work through your queue. You could have finished that book.
Oh, God. No, I can't because I couldn't read. I mean, yeah, you're right. You're right. If I was listening to the audiobook, I could have finished the book for sure. Man, I fell behind because I had another weekend off.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's because of the work I'm doing now at work requires me to be there Monday through Friday. So it's like I have to have the weekends off now. They're like, well, I guess we got to give it to you because I can only work 40 hours a week. And, you know,
well, that's nice. That's
so, yeah, it is nice. And
how long is that expected to last?
Last weekend was my last time. They're going to do that probably for a while. Maybe it'll happen again in the future. Don't know though. So, yeah, I definitely fell behind in my queue this week for podcasts, and it's definitely leading me to consider dropping a couple. One specifically.
Care to share?
I guess we could talk about it. I was thinking, do you listen to Invisibilia?
You know, I subscribed to Invisibilia at the end of last season, and I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. But I've been considering the same thing, too.
I don't know why. I mean,
it's not as gripping as I thought it was going to be. I'd rather listen to an episode of Hidden Brain, I think.
Well,
if
you
know, I were...
actually, it's funny because I listened to a story. This American Life was a rerun this last Sunday. It was like episode 316 from years ago. And it was an Elise Spiegel story on there, and she's one of the hosts of Invisibilia. And I was just like, is something weird when Ira is not like hands-on in the story? It's like you're right. It's not as driven, or it's not as compelling. There's something like, you know, when it's not, when this editorial team is not on it, when this American Life, like the story on This American Life this week was gripping and galvanizing, and just like it was a great listen. And then I listened to this week's Invisibilia, and I was just like, oh, man, I forgot that I wanted to unsubscribe at the end of last season and the season before that. And I think it's like, to me, if I had to say why, it's this over sentimentality. And I know last week we were talking about sentimentality and like how I was getting overly sentimental about, you know, life and friends and things like that, and that's fine because it's me. But I don't want to, like, I don't want that from my learning shows. Like, Invisibilia, I was considering as like a show about learning, and they were really, and I think that's the point of Invisibilia. I'm not missing the point here. Like, Invisibilia is a show about invisible things, like the things that aren't Radiolab style stuff, or they're not just telling a story about things. They're trying to discuss feelings. And I think there's a lot of people who are into that, and I have enough to deal with feelings on the regular.
Do you listen to Hidden Brain? Because it's kind of like it's a similar vibe, but it's less about feelings and more about like why we think the way we think.
I applied to Hidden Brain.
Oh, did you?
They had an associate producer open position like last year or something. Surprise, I did not get it. But I listened to a couple episodes. Yeah,
it's a good show.
Yeah, I mean, I just like, you know, I listened to it in double speed. They also, and this is something that I'm finding very peeved, like a very small gripe, is that whenever podcasts use the same music that I've used in another show that I've done, like they use, I think it's Blue Note is the company that just licenses out, you know, instrumental music for podcasts or TV or film or whatever. You just essentially buy a monthly subscription and then you can just download whatever. You buy a package of their music, and I hear cues listen from shows that I've produced in the past, you know, and I'm like, oh, I hate, like they're not shows I was proud of producing. I'll put it that way. Like, they're shows that, like the food show, where I was just like kind of the editor and asked to do some stuff that I wasn't really into doing. And they're like, here, just take this music, use this music in the show. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll just use this uninspired music. And then I start hearing it pop up on Reply All, on Invisibilia. I want to say I heard it on Love and Radio, but I don't think... I'm thinking of a different show, probably, on Radiotopia that used it. But yeah, like when I hear generic canned music, it just, like, it's a peeve of mine. Like, nobody should use those if they can help it. I know composers aren't easy to come by, but
yeah, we were talking about this.
I just
today.
Think that like they should.
Mine is the most boring and generic music ever, or the stuff that I've made for the New Breaker podcast. At least it's bad. I need something.
But
better.
Did you make it, or yeah. did you? Then that's fine. That's,
no, it's that's not. All. It's so far from fine. I would rather make something that was made by somebody else that's generic, because it's probably at least twice as good.
That's the thing, though. It's like it's just the fact that you're not going to hear it elsewhere. Like, something you made is not going to be the exact same thing, like note for note, beat for beat. Like, it's just because you start to see that music is a tool, mm-hmm. like, to make you nervous. What I'm trying to think of an example of when I felt really manipulated by music recently. Oh, with the I watched Free Solo. Did you see that?
Nope.
Are you scared of heights, right?
No, I'm scared of falling.
Okay, I mean, don't those things go hand in hand?
Nope.
So, like, if you're on,
I can be
a top
pie, and if I'm
skyscraper.
Secured, it's totally cool. But Free Solo, okay. he is not, and that's nope.
No, he's very not secure. But I was watching that, and while the visuals are stunning, and while the subject is insane, I felt very manipulated by the music, especially towards the end when they're like, you know, like it's. Like realizing like this, the thing about Free Solo is that dude is out of his mind. Mm-hmm. And like from watching his 60 Minutes special that came out like probably 8 years ago or something like that, like 60 Minutes Australia, it's still on YouTube. I recommend it if you want to like do a small dose of that. It's when he did Half Dome, I want to say. Basically he woke up early one day before the film crew showed up and just did it himself without, he's like, you wouldn't want to see me do this. Like, it'd be too weird for you guys for a film crew to be up there filming me while I'm trying to climb. And he just went and did it without telling anybody he was doing it. Mm. And I thought that was awesome. But there was no music in that news piece because it was like a 60 Minutes piece. They're not there to embellish. They're there kind of just like to show a story and just exist. But this movie was very much an embellishment and like a narrative that they were trying to create around him having difficulty in this one passage or whatever, and like getting injured because of his romantic partner that he'd recently found. It was a good movie, good doc. But the music just like was very suspenseful at this one part. And I'm like watching it, I'm like, this dude is having no difficulty at all at this point. Like there doesn't need to be suspenseful music. He's just climbing. And the fact that the music is there is what's making me nervous that he's going to fall. But like, this is like he looks like he's just like going through the motions, and no doubt he's practiced enough, but like, mm-hmm. but he's like the best in the world, quite seriously, like the best in the world at free soloing, balls of steel. But he might as well just be walking down the sidewalk right now. You know, like that's how I feel. And like, it's like if you put precarious music over somebody walking down the sidewalk, you're like, okay, a piano is about to drop. And that's the manipulative nature of the music. So going back to my initial point, sorry, is that it's just like putting music in a podcast is very manipulative. But so is it. I mean, that's the way it's been in film forever, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's part of it. Like when I ran Under the Gun, we had a writer who would do, she would write really great long form pieces about the use of music in specific movies. Like her whole angle on the movie was the soundtrack and how it played into the movie and like what emotions were heightened because of the soundtrack. And I always thought that was really interesting, because sometimes, you know, you really nail it and sometimes you fall flat. So I think if it's like well done, it's part of the movie making experience. Like, why
for
not?
Sure.
Like, I mean, Alien is a great example of that, because there is like no soundtrack, like, right? I mean, it's
the
very
video
sparse.
Game, or are you talking the movie?
The movie. It's very sparse. Yes. Like you're right. You're alone in space.
Right.
And that alone, especially during that time, was so unique. It was just so like terrifying because there was no music.
Yeah. Well, in the podcast conversation, it's more about, like, I'm all for music and I'm all for manipulation, but it's hard to manipulate someone when the music is being used in another podcast and you're, or like something like that. And if you listen to enough podcasts, it's going to loop around. Like, if you're going to, you know, hear it you're not going to be able to like fool your audience and be like, wait, I know this song. Why do I know this song? And like, they're going to start thinking like, oh, I know this song because it was on Reply All recently. Or like, it was on, you know, so-and-so podcast. Like,
I mean, I do that all the time. Like, This American Life is great. I mean, great show. We've talked about it enough, but at the end of every clip or every act of their show, there's usually like a song, and most of the time they'll only play it for a couple seconds unless it's like the last tune. Mm-hmm. And I find some great songs on there. I've added some really great music from This American
it's
Life.
It's never
to my
anything I know. Yeah. I've never heard. It's never something I know.
I want to know who's picking this music. They're geniuses.
Yeah. I mean, it might be one of those names that gets rattled off at the end.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I'll have to dig into it. But man, yeah, they must just like, I imagine they have an actual record collection that they actually listen to and probably spend a lot of time in record stores and digging up stuff. I love it because the stuff that they find is, it's not always super obscure, but it's never like,
it's
the
always
lead
on
track.
Target. It's always on Target. It's never a single really. And it's always on Target. Sometimes if it's something, you know, it's typically a cover song too. That's what I've noticed.
I wonder if they have some kind of like special internal search engine for lyrics, and they put in a couple keywords from
the
story.
Might be Google.
And it, well, I don't know. I've tried to do the same thing. Like, okay, I'm trying to find, even for the show, for the show, I can't remember which metadata slot it is in Transistor, but it might be like the subtitle spot. I usually use like a quote from something, whether it be like a song or a movie or something that's somewhat related to what we're talking about. And I've tried to do that for certain things, try to find a song that uses these keywords or is talking about this kind of thing. And every once in a while I'll find something, but it's usually something really obvious. And it's like it's in the first three genius links on your Google result page. But I feel like they've got to have something better or they have somebody that's just very knowledgeable about really cool music. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's what music supervisors do. They're paid to be really cool about music.
It's my dream. I wish I was really cool about music, like a music supervisor.
But I mean, all you have to do is do it, you know, like that's the thing is like, you just have to find like a production really and be like, hey, can I be music supervisor? And like, and just kind of work your way in.
Yeah.
There.
But like, I feel like when you have that job, you probably spend a lot of time listening to new things, but
yeah, you just
I feel like
bombarded.
To be really good at the job, you have to have like a really good internal catalog of music. And just when you see a scene, you know what that scene is supposed to.
No, I think you're giving them too much credit.
No,
like,
no,
the,
no.
Like, I mean, like my friend, I have friends that work in music placement, and they have a library with keywords. Like they ask the composers to write keywords with their songs, essentially. Mm-hmm. So you know, I won't say the name of the company, but you know, I was a part of a community, like a company that was getting major trailer and television, Netflix film placements. And you know, essentially you get a brief every week, and you know, like saying, hey, we're looking for songs like this Black Keys song, and for this trailer campaign here's the budget, and you'll get half of this and the other half will go to us, and make sure to tag, like, give your song an interesting title, because we want to be able to stand out from the rest, and make sure in the metadata you are giving us as many tags as possible to do with the content of this. That way they can just go into their catalog, their search, they have their own internal search engine, and they have their own hard drive backup, you know, whatever archive of shit of music from hundreds of composers all over the world that just gets pooled into it. And composers will get a notice like 2 years later. Like I have a friend from college who just got a placement on a Netflix series, from something he wrote, like he submitted a year and a half ago or something like that, you know? And it's not always a huge payout, but like, it's, you know, you'd just be pleasantly surprised, like, oh, I put a keyword of like energetic or moody in there, and they typed it in and they said, okay, here's 10 tracks. They'll go to the producer, just slap him in the face with 10 tracks, be like, what do you think of these? And the producer will either be like, I don't like any of them. They'll be like, I like this one, but can you change it this way? And then they reach out to the composer and have them change it. Or they'll say, I like this one exactly the way it is. And they might need you to like reach out and be like, okay, we need 4 versions of this, one without the drums, one with that's like 30 seconds long, one that's 2 minutes long, something loopable. and that's the way, that's quite literally the way music supervision works. Like, you get a catalog, you get people submitting music to you, and like, and you just, you have like an assistant, or if you're, this is a solo job, you're just cataloging this, being like, what does this make you feel? Who does this sound like? That way, when a director's like, I want something that sounds like The Replacements, you're like, you just get The Replacements, like a knockoff of them.
Have you submitted anything to these catalogs?
I did when I joined 4 years ago. And then I recently got booted off the roster for not submitting anything for 4 years.
Oh, bummer. You just put
which
out an
sucks
album
because
too.
My best friend runs it. You know, my best friend runs it. And I got the email from one of his colleagues being like, hey, you haven't submitted in a while. We're going to kick you off the list because we think you're just, you know, taking confidential information about trailers that are coming out soon. Cause like I got hit up for like Rogue One, you know, for like the trailer, not personally, definitely not personally. Like, they send the broadcast out to everybody, but like, I got a, you know, a notice being like, hey, there's a new Star Wars movie coming out and we need trailer stuff. And that's how I knew when we on Bantha Fodder would talk about the trailer music. Remember that, that we in Rogue One, they had like the Force theme mixed with the Imperial March, kind of like on piano.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and how Giacchino, or who ended up actually doing it?
But it wasn't Giacchino. Like, right. It doesn't matter who eventually scored the movie, because it was just a trailer, and that's what trailer houses do. They reach out to this company that my friend's at, and he and they go out to a million composers, and they look for ads. And so I remember getting the Star Wars brief when it came out, and I've gotten, up until now, since I've been booted, I was getting, like, you know, like an Aquaman thing, and basically every major.
Oh man, you got to get back on there.
I am literally the reason why that is the reason why I was booted, so that I'm not on there just looking for information.
No. I mean, not just so you can look for information, but you just put out a record. Like, there are songs that you could have uploaded.
Well, that's separate. You know, like I'm in talk. Like, you know, they have my record. They know what to do with it if they hear something. But I mean, no, I think we mentioned this when the album was coming out. My music's not in vogue. You know, like, rock music is not in vogue right now. It's not getting placements in trailers unless it's a very specific movie about rock and roll or something like that. Like, electronic music is king right now. And like, also like the little, I think the word is plucky, that all the advertisers hate, or that are asking for, and all the music supervisors wanting to pull their hair out, because what the hell does plucky mean? Like, I think typically it means like acoustic guitar, ukulele, snaps, vocalese, which is just like, just humming or something like that. Plucky, you know? I could get on there, but I think the consensus that I came to when discussing it with said friend was that, like, why bother even trying when you're competing with people that are, like, working in major studios with, like, you know, $20,000 and string plugins? Like,
yeah, but for, you know, for every one of those stories, though, there's always a story of, like, the guy who, the dudes who did the Stranger Things theme. They were in a moderately successful rock band, and they ended up making the music for a very popular TV show. Like,
yes,
they were not big studio artists. There was a really good piece on, was it Song Exploder, for the music for The Daily?
Yes, I thought just that was interesting.
That was just some band he liked. And they're like, yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah.
We've got like a whole SoundCloud full of demos. See if there's anything on here you like.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's fine. That's great. I mean,
yeah.
I put together the Nicole Byers theme song, you know?
Yeah.
How about that?
That's pretty cool.
It's not cool. It's bad. But people like it, so. It's also just an arrangement of Hello, My Honey, or whatever, you know? Like, it's not an original composition.
I wanted to, like, when I was trying to do something for the Breaker podcast, I was like, okay, let me just open up the piano roll and start drawing stuff, and it's just too hard. I have a little bit of like classical musical training, but I've forgotten all of it, and I don't know. I barely even remember Every Good Boy Does Fine. Is that right?
Yes.
The staff. I'm trying to remember the staff. Okay. I don't remember any of it. So constructing a tune for me is absolutely out of the question now, which is really sad. Which basically means that I'm either limited to finding some kind of free, royalty free music on the internet, or composing something with Apple's stock loops, and that's what I did, and it's bad.
That's fine.
It's fine for this show. like, it's no one's expecting some kind of grand thing that's going to sweep you up and remind you that you're in a safe place now with the Breaker podcast, but it's fine.
Safe place.
It'll work.
I do appreciate that the dailies theme is like so weird for a news show. They're like, it's like the anti-news show theme.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good.
It's great. I think it's excellent. But no, I mean, I would say as long as it's something that has not been made before, and there's no way it could be because you literally made it there. So any mixing errors that you made, any weird EQing that you weren't keen to, any levels that are off, any instrumentation or notes or theory that's unique to you is different from something. And I think that's better than hearing a blue dot session or whatever they're called. I think they're blue dot sessions, what they're called.
The theme song that I've made is a sound effect plus two different tracks of percussion.
I'm sold. You sold me. You had me at sound effect.
It goes like, pew, as the percussion kicks in. That's it.
Why don't you just play it? It just goes, pew.
Man, these episodes have been killing me. Like, it's hard
the
to work on
podcast?
Them because the recordings that we got on our retreat, I did enough recordings for basically five episodes. There were going to be like three interview episodes, and then I recorded pieces during those sessions for two other episodes where I just kind of like pieced together little bits with a little bit of narrative. And I mean, all the content that I got was great. But the delivery of the content wasn't, because the technical difficulties that we had were just, they were a drag. So the past couple of days I've been spending many hours trying to clean up what I can. Cause I did some rough edits during the hack week. Cause it was my hack week project. I was expected to, you know, have something to show. So I did present two very, very rough cuts of the first two episodes, and they just sounded terrible. Like, there was that, there's the now, the Yeti wine that you complained about for so long. And I said, oh, it's nothing. It doesn't do that anywhere else except for my house. No, it does it everywhere. They're really bad microphones. Yeah. And Blue can write off, because I sent them that microphone.
Oh, whoa. You made Jacob
said, hey,
say a bad
this
word.
Thing is, I said, this thing is broken. And they're like, send it back to us. We'll check it. I sent it back to them, which I had to do out of my own pocket. They got it. They allegedly tested it, sent it back to me with a note saying everything's fine, which is just BS. Yeah. If you plug it into any computer anywhere, it's not fine. There's a terrible amount of line noise that luckily I can almost completely erase with RX, but it's awful. It gets everywhere. And then the room was all echoey. The mic placement wasn't fantastic. I didn't even have a microphone to use, so I had to use my Apple earbuds.
Yeah, that's insane.
So what I ended up doing, luckily the first episode where I was using two microphones for the two, I had both Eric and Leah on the first episode. I wanted to have both the founders together rather than separate interviews, because they have a bunch of those. I mean, if you look at their Breaker profile, they've got tons of individual interviews, but I don't think they've done any together. Like, that doesn't make sense. Come on, let's do it on the Breaker podcast. So anyway, I had them together, and they each recorded on a Yeti, which gave us some passable audio. Of course, there's a lot of overlap because the microphones were 4 feet away from each other, and even in directional mode, it's rough. But then with mine, like, I'm just recording on earbuds, and luckily, I think in that one, I was holding them the right direction. On the second episode, I was not. I think maybe my earphone or my headphone had twisted around once or twice before I put it in my ear. So it was facing the wrong way. It was completely unlistenable. So here's a behind the scenes secret of the Unheard Breaker podcast. I re-recorded all of the audio for my end of the conversation for episode 2.
That's crazy, because that's not even re-recording. You're not even just re-recording, you're acting in that case.
Yeah, and it sucks. I hate doing it because it's disingenuous in a way, because I'm just trying to match the inflection and have half of a conversation with myself. I'm listening to Steve talk and I'm listening to myself, and I'll loop. Like for each section that I wanted to re-record, which was pretty much most of it, I would loop my response. I would listen to him. I would loop my response. So I would like get it stuck in my brain exactly how I said the thing, exactly the right timing. And then
you're doing ADR. What you're doing, yes, is ADR. Okay. Yes. That's
except,
crazy.
Except better than they do on Arrested Development. They're just awful at it. Yes, that's essentially what I'm doing. I did it for the entire conversation, and I sent it to Steve to show him, like, hey, I cleaned up the episode. Yours was the first I finished. I wanted to make sure that you heard it and you thought it was good. And he listened. He's like, you recorded your end, didn't you? And I'm like, I did. If you weren't there for the original conversation, do you think you'd notice? And he's like, if I hadn't heard it the first time, I don't think I would notice. Like, that's good. I do think it's like, it does sound natural. And for anybody who doesn't listen to the show and ends up hearing it, I don't think that they're going to know the difference. They may be like, why does he sound so crisp and clean and the other guy sounds just okay?
You could match the room tone with RX. You could use Logic and use their, because I mean, Space Designer is amazing.
Oh, and make my end sound worse.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly, I would recommend less, because it's going to sound really off. Like if it is crisp and clean,
it's okay. I would recommend his end isn't bad. Like I did some cleaning to it, and I didn't have perfect success.
If I was in a situation, I would definitely add, I would just use Space Designer and just like bus your vocal track into use it on a Space Designer on a bus, and then send your vocal track in and just mix in a little bit of room. And like I did that on, what did I just do that on? It was a live episode of Good One, the podcast about jokes. It was Lil Rel. It was recorded back in October, and they do a section where we do, there's a sound effect that happens, but I have all the sound effects on my, I'm queuing them. They were queued live, but, there was like a weird overlap or something like that. And the front of house mic was bad. So like it wasn't usable audio and it would just sound like really weird. So what I just did was I just bust the audio from the sound effect and just sent it into a room and tried my best to match the reverb of the actual interview in the whatever hall they were in at the Vulture Fest thing. Okay. And it sounded passable, you know, like it just sounded like it was in the room with them. And so like that's what I would do if I was in your situation and editing that.
Maybe I'll try it.
Well, the best thing about a bus is that it's non-committal, you know.
I know, but the thing is, I actually haven't used RX at all through Logic. I do like.
You don't need to use RX at all. This is purely in Logic.
Oh.
Yeah, like you just go into Logic and under the channel strip, I'm looking at it right now. You have these send in Logic, and you click on the send, and you just choose. I can't do it while I'm recording. But you just choose send and send it to aux one or whatever, and then it'll show you the aux channel where the master is, and then you will then you can just add an effect on there on the aux channel, and then it will send your audio into this aux channel, and then you can just add Space Designer and then just run through all the reverbs. There's like 150,000.
So is that like the
reverbs.
Digital equivalent of a like a patch bay?
Yes, it is. Okay. That's what the aux is. Like, it's like you're just sending it into your effects rack or something like that, but it's the digital version. And your iMac can more than handle that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I've spent a lot of time on these so far. The first one I didn't re-record because it sounded okay. Second one I did because I just had to. I mean, it was so bad. It was completely, it was unlistenable in my opinion. So it's a little bit cleaner. I'm scared to listen to the rest of the audio that I still have to work through, but at least we have these two done. And then I finished up some artwork today that I'm hoping to get approval on from the team. Otherwise, be waiting on that, but then I'll have another podcast, Mike. We won't be paying for this one, I don't think, but, I'll be hosting another interview show.
Good luck for you on that one.
Yeah. It should be fun. There's a lot of things I'm hoping to do with it. Obviously, the team introductions was the first thing that I wanted to do, because I'll be talking to them whenever we have features that come out. I want to talk to them about the stuff that we're working on, kind of having that open channel with the people who use the app, in the same way that Build Your SaaS is helpful for me as a user of their platform, like I like to know what's going on, and I like to be able to make suggestions based on the problems that they're having and things like that. I sent them an email this morning with a couple ideas. I think it's just like a beneficial way to build an app in the way that we already do. Like, I just think it's more intimate than the feedback channel, which you used this week. Thank you, by the way.
You're welcome.
I was surprised. I'm like, Mike Comite. I got some weird breaker notifications this week. I got an email through Bug Life from Mike Comite with an error message that he had, and that's good. We're going to look into that. And then
it's fixed now. You don't have to look into it. Okay, yeah, well, I mean, it just resolved itself. It was, I mean, it's probably you seem like you from your totally candid response from. God, I was so happy when I saw your email come in. I was like, thank God Jacob gets this.
What do you mean?
Because I didn't send it because I actually, you know, I sent it because I was hoping that you would get it.
Oh yeah, I'm the only person that reads those. I'm not the only person that reads those, but I'm generally the only person that responds.
Yeah, the first line of defense. Yeah,
that's right. So yeah, no, that's something that's been popping up a couple times recently, and I had a pretty good idea of what was going on your end, which was actually really helpful, because a lot of the people who write into us, I don't know how often they use the app. I know how often you use Breaker. So that
which
was actually
never.
Right.
You have a
that's
lot of followers on there.
I do.
You
it's
like
been
a
slowing
followers.
Down. It's been slowing down recently, which I think is strange, but I think we made some adjustments and we've added more people to our like recommended to follow list. I think it used to just be staff, and I think we've been adding more like regular users. I think if you use the app so often, you might show up there. So it's been tapering off.
I think I have 5 followers.
That's pretty good. I think I know all of them by memory.
Yeah, you could probably just, you could probably, not even by memory, you could guess who the 5 followers are.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have a pretty good idea. But no, after I got your email, I posted on Instagram stories. We have like a new feature in Breaker where if you go to a show page or an episode page or even your profile and you send, like you hit the share button, a list of places will pop up, you know, common places being Twitter or Facebook or what have you. But we've just added some new features where you can share to Instagram stories. So if you tap the Instagram stories thing, it'll just open up Instagram stories with a little screen that's pre-populated with, you know, like a nice gradient in the background. And then it'll have your Breaker stats. So in Breaker, we keep track of your likes and your listens. And one metric I specifically asked for, because we worked on this during the hack week, I was like, you know what would be really cool? How many hours you've listened, or days or weeks you've listened to podcasts in Breaker. And that may not be like the actual time you spent, you know, given your adjustments. But the stat that we return on this is, and this is, I think, the only way you can currently find it, is how much audio, like how the length, total duration of audio that you've listened to through Breaker. And of course I went through when I joined Breaker and I marked as listened every podcast I could ever remember listening to, which is easy because I'm a completionist on most shows. So I could just mark all as listened on a bunch of shows. But mine is, it's pretty embarrassing. Like I can pull it up now, but anyway, I shared this and it's funny. Like it just goes to show how like under the radar I am now in comparison to where I was a couple years ago. I was talking to May about this over dinner. Like she's like, oh, why don't you for podcasting, why don't you ask Twitter for people to ask you questions? I'm like, nobody gives a shit about me. I've been losing Twitter followers over the last 5 years.
Twitterers. Like,
I think
Twitterers.
Yeah. I think I've lost, you know, several hundred Twitter followers over the years, probably most of them bots, but some of them people who were in bands or band accounts who stop following me because I can't do anything for them anymore, and people that I unfollowed who are just returning the favor, like, you know, I'll just whatever.
Dude, I'm so glad we started a podcast.
Why?
Just because I'm glad that I'm not one of those people like that unfollowed you because like I stopped playing music or whatever, you know, like that could have very easily been the thing. Like I don't know, like, because I definitely like when we I'm taking this off the rails for a second, but it's like,
no,
I just feel like
it.
I need to say it before we lose it, before I lose the thought, which is that, you know, like when we started talking, like your enthusiasm for my music was so flattering, and it made me feel so good about myself, and it made me want to engage you more as a fan and like as a person who I knew was in writing and things like that. So like I would send you on your birthday, I would send you one of my demos or something like that, and
yeah,
and like it could have stopped at that, and then we started a podcast together just because like you asked, and now I don't like the music thing is like, you know, relegated to a hobby, I guess, and but yeah, we still get to do this, and like we have a good friendship. So that's all I want to say on that. And I want to
say I'm grateful for that too. And you know, yeah, I recognize that at the time. Like I didn't think, oh, Mike Comente, he's just reaching out because he wants coverage. Because I mean, I was gonna give it to you anyway, and I think you knew that because I was a fan. But there you had a good strategy there, and I actually talked about this when I was on a panel at South by Southwest, which I think is going on right now. But I was at South by several years ago, and I talked on a panel that was made up of people, most of the people that I had worked with at Under the Gun or other places, where we kind of talked about the bridge between journalist and publicist, because a lot of people, at least in our racket in music, generally share those roles or dip their toe in both ponds. So I hated writing about stuff that I didn't give a shit about. I hated it, and I had to do it all the time. But I eventually found a method that worked for me. It's like, if you're going to interact with me on Twitter and you're going to take the time to see the kind of stuff that I like, and if you're not going to waste my time with your thrash metal, and you're going to show me something that I genuinely like, and you know, maybe take interest in the other things that I'm interested in other than music or whatever's going on, that's going to go so far with me, and I'm going to want to help you out. Like, I'm going to have more fun writing about your music and everything that you're about, because I know that you're a decent person and you're not just using me for whatever. And you are one of the ones that did it the right way. And there were a couple other persons like you're actually not the only person to send me music on my birthday. Like
it's a tactic, but like, I guess, but I think it's
nice. I think like if you know that somebody's a fan of yours, you want to keep them engaged, and you can't do that to every fan individually. I mean, maybe you could if you set up a newsletter and you ask for everybody's birthday. Theoretically, you could do that, and actually, that's kind of a cool idea. Somebody should take that. But
yeah,
like it's nice when you know that they are, you know, thinking about your stuff, because it's easy for me to think about Old Best Friend because I listen to Old Best Friend all the time in iTunes. Like it's in constant rotation. My Comete is constantly running through my brain, and it's cool to have it the opposite way around, to know that somebody appreciates what you're doing as well. So yeah, that this is we're way off the track now, but that was kind of a cool part of music, was actually getting to know people and make friends through the stuff that I was doing. That was more often than not just soul sucking and boring.
Yeah, it was like a silver lining. But anyway, right, you're losing Twitter followers.
Yeah, I'm losing Twitter followers. Backtracking. Instagram stories. Yeah, so my really embarrassing stats. When you like share your Breaker profile on Instagram stories, you get this little, I think you can call it a sticker, but it's not really a sticker with the way that Instagram stories works. In any case, it says follow me at Breaker as your handle and your Breaker profile picture. How many episodes you've listened to, how many followers you have, how many people you're following. I'm following 69. Nice. And it says I've listened to 30 weeks, 6 days, 7 hours and 27 minutes worth of podcast.
That's like, which is like a lot. 3/5 of a year.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's half a year.
But I shared this the other day, and I got two replies immediately, like almost immediately, probably within 5 minutes. And I'm assuming that's because I barely use Instagram stories. And you know, when somebody hasn't used it in a while and then they post, it says somebody posted to their stories for the first time in a long time. You get that like extra notification.
It's very nice.
Yeah. Well, Jack Appleby and Dan Bogosian, two people that I've known for a very, very long time. And in fact, might have both been job references for the Breaker job. They both replied and said, "What's Breaker?" So it just goes to show like how far off the radar I am. I mean, it's in my Twitter profile. It has been for a year. I've been with Breaker since the end of last March or maybe early April of last year. It's been a very long time now. I guess I post about them fairly often. I post links to podcasts through Breaker. Like, I'm not quiet on the fact that I work for them, but two people that I consider close friends and people that I have used as job references, if not for this job, then for other jobs in the past, they had no idea who I worked for or what Breaker even was. So that was interesting. But this all leads to the two other interesting Breaker notifications that I got this week. The first being your bug report. The second being May joining Breaker because she got a new phone and she now has the space and the speed and the battery power to actually download and use Breaker.
Phone doesn't shut off every time she tries to like turn it on.
Yes, exactly. It finally turned off for the last time about a week ago. Oh, and she got
R.I.P.
a new one. Yeah, she replaced the one. She replaced the same one that she had, so she got another 5S. She likes that little thing.
Dude, do you know that Apple? Like, have you been looking at the news about Apple? Like, with the because she could have just gotten the SE. They're selling.
No! That's clearance. That's what she has. What did I say? Oh, the 5S?
You said 5S.
Same form factor. I'm sorry, it's confusing.
Same form factor. Very different processors. They're like two years apart.
She has this. She has the SE. Which is what she had before. She had the SE before.
I was going to say, because, yeah, they've been putting, like, a few of those on clearance every like, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. I don't know if she got it through Apple. I think she got it through,
It always pops up in my news feed in the morning when I'm looking at, like, Apple news or whatever, you know, like, technology news. Like, oh, Apple put out the SE again. Get them while it's hot. And you can get a brand new one for, like, 32 gigabytes for, like, $250 or whatever it is.
Yeah. I think she I think she literally replaced the one she had. I think she got another 16 gigabyte for like $100, maybe less.
Okay, well, that's fine. Where'd she get that?
It's a good deal. I think it's through like her carrier's insurance program or something.
Oh, so yeah, she probably got like a refurbished one or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Anyway, she got a new phone and she signed up for Breaker, and that's cool. Okay. It looks like she's actually using it to listen, which is neat. And then my grandfather signed up.
How did that happen?
He saw my Instagram story, and the only social network that my grandpa has is Instagram. My grandma has, well, I think she's on Instagram too now, but she for a long time had Facebook covered, and then he would take Instagram to keep up with the grandkids.
That's really cute.
And so he replied to my story and he says, please explain what this means. Don't understand. Can't follow you because I don't know what Breaker is or where to find it. Surprised face emoji.
I talked to one of my older cousins today and he also had to have a podcast explained to him when he asked me what I was up to.
So yeah, I linked my grandpa to the podcast app that I work for and he installed it and he made an account and he followed me and that's probably the last time he'll use it.
What's a app, Jacob?
Oh man. I don't want to air his dirty laundry or anything, but he had a funny tech help story the other day. He called me up and he seemed frantic. Like he had some issue. He uses his phone for pretty much everything now. He has a computer. I think it probably has a bad virus or something on it now, and he can't really use it. So he just uses his phone for all his emails. And he's a member of the Rotary Club, and he does a lot of stuff around the area. So like he's constantly writing emails. And I mean, if you've heard me talk at length on this podcast or know any of my other male relatives on that side of the family, you know that we're talkers and that we generally write more than we need to. So he's prone to writing very long emails. I guess he was writing one on his phone through just like the standard mail app. And he got like a spam phone call. So the phone rings and he just goes to like dismiss it because he wants to get back to this email. And so the phone rings and takes his screen away. He hits the hang up button and it goes back and his email's gone. And it was like a really, really long email. Like, probably wrote close to 600 words on his phone, you know, typing on, I think he has a 5S and he's got big thumbs. So it probably took him a long time to get that done. And so he called me up and he asked me where he could find it. I'm like, okay, let's go through the steps. Let's check your drafts. It wasn't in drafts. I was like, did you accidentally send it? Go to sent, not in sent. not in deleted. It's not in any of his folders in the mail app. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, unfortunately, I think it's gone. He's like, ah, that's just so disappointing. And then he explained to me that this very long email he had handwritten on his yellow pad of paper first. And then he was typing it in.
Dude, is this my dad? Is your grandfather my dad? Keep going. Hit me with this. I'm shaking my head.
The poor guy, like, he was almost done typing his thing and a spam caller just erased it. And that's not how it should work. It should go to drafts. If the mail app falls out of memory and decides to flush out, it should first save that to drafts. That should be the first thing it does. But the phone's so old and has so little memory that it couldn't handle those two very simple tasks.
Doesn't it depend on your, because it would save to a drafts folder on an account. So it would be like if he's using Yahoo or Gmail or
he has AOL,
whoever,
which could be part of the problem.
That email would have to have a. That's your mistake right there.
Yeah. Well, I've tried getting him onto something else.
Don't want to be using none of that AOL stuff.
He still uses the AOL browser.
Oh, Grandpa.
I know. I'm telling him. I'm like, I can get you set up with Chrome. I can make it look almost identical to the AOL browser. He just wants the button to check his mail as soon as he opens it up. That's all he needs. I can even set the homepage to the AOL homepage. But in any case,
the AOL app.
Yeah. Poor guy. I told him, well, I'm like, well, at least you have your hard copy.
Yeah. Oh, man. My dad, he will write something. My dad writes numbers down a lot and crunches a lot of numbers and wants to share them with me.
Like
various things in
life. Jim Carrey style? Or?
I don't know. What's that referencing?
23.
No, not like that. I mean, maybe like that. You know, I don't know his internal monologue, but or his past for that matter. But no, what it's like is he has to like crunch some numbers for like stocks or whatever accounts and things like that. And he's like, oh, good shares with Michael. So he'll handwrite a spreadsheet, mm-hmm. really. He will do all the math with a calculator, do all the columns, columns and rows. He'll do the spreadsheet. He'll then scan it in on his printer scanner. He will then print out that spreadsheet, put it in an envelope, and then mail it to me.
No.
100%.
With like stamps and everything?
With stamps.
Wow.
Usually with a couple magazine articles in there from magazines that are definitely available online.
Oh, cool.
It's just...
Well, it's good to hold a physical piece of paper, you know?
No, it is not. I call him on it every single time, and he's like, no, it's just toilet paper. I'm just sending you toilet paper, Michael. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. thanks, Dad. Thanks.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I love it. My dad was lobbying for me to get back on Facebook the other day.
Oh, yeah. That's why you tried to log in today?
No, I tried logging in today because I finished that artwork and I wanted to send it to the team. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't really an email thing, but we don't have Slack. We do have like a group chat on Facebook Messenger, though.
Oh, Slack. Wow.
No, we're anti-Slack. I mean, it's a fine company. We don't find it useful for our very small team.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So yeah, I was just going to send it to the group chat that we already had on whatever. And just, I sent it and I said thoughts and my caption went through, but the image didn't. I'm like, oh, that's weird. I thought, oh, maybe there's some kind of like weird file limit. Cause I exported like a 3,500 pixel ping image. And okay, maybe it doesn't accept that. So I dropped the resolution, uploaded it as a JPEG. Wouldn't go through. Sure enough. Hmm. Facebook's having some pretty massive outages today. I think it's still going on. We're going on like 8 or 9 hours, and Facebook
Burn
and Instagram
to the ground, make it all go trouble. Away, erase everything. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. But in any case, it didn't work on there. So I'm like, oh, well, I'll go on Facebook and I'll just try to upload it from there. I was on my laptop, so I thought I'd just do it there and then deactivate again. And yeah, it wouldn't let me log in. And it said, oh, we're working on just, you know, some routine maintenance right now. Nothing to see here. It's like, that's perfect timing. First time I've needed to log into Facebook in months and it's down. So
yeah, saved me. I hope it stays down. Man, I could just do without that Facebook.
Yeah, I bet everybody had a really good day today. That's my guess.